Welcome to It's a Good Good Podcast. My name is Hayden.
I'm Chris.
I'm Harry.
And yeah, we're just a bunch of guys having talks about theology, the Bible, and God. And basically our whole goal is just to be accessible to anyone, that you don't need a theology seminary degree.
Right.
To be able to talk about God. We definitely want to make it easy and simple.
I definitely don't have any of those degrees.
Yeah. That's so true, though. I mean, you just have to be interested in it. Mm. All the information's out there.
Oh, man, that was funny. Okay. So, here we are once again. This is the Good Good Podcast. It is a good, good podcast. And we are turning back the timetables of our podcast to work forwards rather than backwards, which is kind of what we have done up to this point, which has been good. So last time we gave an overview, kind of an introduction to Genesis and like why. We kind of talked about why it's important to read it, why it's important to know what it says, and kind of my big takeaway from that conversation was that Genesis 1 through 11 particularly gives you an encyclopedia, so to speak, of like images and symbols and ideas that are important for the reader to carry with them as they read on, because they're going to be repeated and expanded upon and twisted in important ways that are all making important claims, mm-hmm. but kind of in subtext sort of ways rather than overtly.
Mm-hmm. The codex, if you will, how do we, or design yeah. patterns as the Bible Project calls them.
Yeah.
How do we bring those to light and then notice them as they're repeated over and over and over again in the text?
Yeah. And I think it's important to kind of know this and think about it, because like so here's one argument that I encountered not all that long ago was, okay, the early followers of Jesus didn't actually think that he was God, or he never actually said that he was God. That was kind of like a later misconstruing of the disciples' teaching or whatever, and people ended up making him out to be God, but really he never proclaimed that, he never professed that, and like it's not found in the text, okay? And if you were to, and then they would be like, well, John's a different story though, like don't worry about John, that came later, you just shouldn't take that for, you know, as it is. Okay, fine.
What about Paul?
let's just say, you know, you're gonna be fine discounting John. So then you go over to Mark and you read it and you're like, oh, well,
he never says.
I guess I can kind of see where they're coming from here. However,
until you read, yeah, the Old Testament. Yeah.
However, the reason you're missing on what the Bible authors would say was very explicit claims about Jesus's divinity and that he is God is because they're not using overt thesis statements mm-hmm. about his divinity like Paul would do, but they're actually using pre-established images and symbolisms and metaphors that are connected only with God, mm. and now Jesus is doing them too.
And putting himself in the place of God.
Right. And I would say that you also get from reading the Old Testament is the significance of using the word Lord. So they don't overtly say that Jesus is Yahweh, but they say that he's Lord,
mm-hmm.
which if you start to read the Old Testament is virtually, that's what they're, it's even better because what they're alluding to is that he's Israel's God. And it's just, yeah, but I mean, if you just see Lord, like Lord can mean a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we'll see it here in about a page.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so that's why I think, you know, one reason why it's important to know, like the Bible is not straightforward a lot of the times with the things that you want. You know, a lot of people when they come to the Bible, they're like, all right, I want to know, who is God? Or, like, what's going to happen to me when I die? Or, you know, they
be a good person.
Yeah. And they, like, come and they expect, like, a thesis statement on these things.
Nice, cohesive, super easy to understand way to be a good person or go to heaven or any of those things. Yeah.
But that's not what they get. Instead, they get stories that use images and begin at kind of a simple place and then begin pulling those images and stretching those images to like their limits theologically and expecting you to like be carrying that with you the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what Genesis does. And particularly Genesis 1 and 2 kind of lay the first groundwork of that. But then, like we said, Genesis 1 through 11 seems to give a big scope view of what's going on and kind of a theme for the whole rest of the deal.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if we're supposed to mention this, but I think we should mention that this is actually take two of us going through this. We had like an hour and a half conversation on this very subject, and I don't think we did what we wanted to do. We didn't quite set out to accomplish what I think we're set out to accomplishing today.
No.
So I think what Hayden just said is 100% true. We're going to read this with open mind, as if we're coming to it for the very first time, not having those expectations on like what this is supposed to mean or what the whole Bible is supposed to tell us. And we're going to try to notice some things because, number one, this is a very good story to read. But number two, there are very important phrases, very important structures, all of the above within what we're about to read that are going to help us a lot as we move forward. So,
yeah, and I'd say it's, as we discovered, it's very easy to get lost in some perceived issues, you know, and like we all have different issues with different parts of the Bible, but Genesis, it's especially easy to get lost in details or discrepancies between translations and all that. But what we really want to try to do is not focus on those little things, or not intensely focus on the things that separate
mm-hmm.
different translations or any of that, but really focus on what the author of Genesis is trying to do with the book.
Yeah, I'd say... to me, it seems like I'm personally going to try to come to the text with a little bit more humble state of mind. Mm. And not like I look at the book arrogantly for the most part, but I come to it thinking there is probably no way that I can fully understand this text. Mm-hmm. For a lot of the reasons that we've already talked about. Like, it's very complex. It's very complicated. But there are things that I can notice. There are things that can help me as I continue to read throughout the rest of the story. Since it's meditation literature, that's going to happen each and every time I do it. So,
right.
I think that following our last conversation, I reached like a little bit of a routine for me, which is like a little spiritual crisis where I'm like, this book is stupid. And I think that actually helped me personally come to today's conversation and just go through it humbly with fresh eyes and open mind.
Yeah. Cool. And I think, One more kind of preface before we get into it. I think there may be, and like I've had this question before too, where it's like, are we reading too far into this thing?
Mm-hmm,
like, are we like going too far?
I think that's a common question that like people who meditate on the Bible ask themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like, oh, what you're telling me is that every time the word light is used, like, I should be thinking deeply about the last times I heard that word, and, like, it's all connecting stories, and that seems like a little bit of, like, biblical code. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you're maybe going too far. But I think part of our trouble with that is we are living in a different kind of society that speaks in a different way. And this is a Hebrew work, an Israelite work that is in its own context and created with a very limited vocabulary at the time. Not only was it ancient, like not only was it Hebrew, but it was like ancient Hebrew. Mm-hmm. So it was like a developing language. In the beginning, they didn't have as many words, but I think that is part of what is beautiful in the simplicity that they don't come out and make thesis statements.
Mm-hmm.
Is it actually leaves room for God to like make connections that were like almost accidental, it seems. And another thing too is like, so Psalm 1 says the delight, it says, how blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. He will be like a tree firmly planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and its leaf does not wither. And it goes on. But I think when it's like, are we really supposed to be, like, taking this far? Like, are we really, are you telling me that I'm supposed to be coming back and again and reading forward and backwards? It's like, yeah, like, that actually is what they expect. For you to have, like, a fuller understanding. Like, they really expect that you will learn and see new things mm-hmm. every single time you come back to mm-hmm. it.
Meditate it on it day and night, and eventually you'll see something new. And they are making the claim that what you see is not necessarily wrong. It's intended.
Yeah, there's this really great book called Eat This Book, and it's about reading the Bible and how going through the Bible shouldn't be just something you look at and then forget, but something that you stay with and chew on for a long period of time that stays with you, that you just don't get rid of. Mm-hmm. And it's the whole idea of meditation mm-hmm. is that when we see meditation, a lot of times we think, okay, we just read it and we think about it and we move on. But it's like, no, it's something that should be with you for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I just think that's important to say is, you know, the Bible uses stories almost primarily as the way of its communicating. But, like, we shouldn't just say, oh, I've heard the story, so I know what it says and what it means. Mm-hmm. Well, like, that's not the way this literature works.
And this is also, this is the most common one to do that with.
Yes.
I was saying the other day where it's like, oh, you read Revelation, and you're like, man, this is so complicated. There's so much meaning up in here. But people read Genesis, and they're like, oh, yeah, like, I've heard that story before. Earth was created in 7 days. God, you know, did this and that. We're good to go. But this one is probably more liable for misinterpretation, like misunderstanding, than even Revelation is, just due to how vague it is and due to how yeah. far removed we are from the people who created it and their intent.
I'd say it's at least just as decisive an interpretation,
mm-hmm.
like where people are going to fall on very different parts of the spectrum reading the exact same thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. But in all of that, I think that it actually helps the divinity, in my opinion, to know that, like, the authors themselves, the people that wrote it, left a lot of the interpretation up to the minds of the readers, trusting that God would reveal what he wants, rather than just telling a straight up, like, fact. I think that's really cool. So yeah, let's get into it, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, so I'm going to be reading from the NASB version, which is good for what we're doing. there are a lot of good translations. NASB does its best to be as literal as possible without sounding completely caveman, even though that might be helpful too.
Yeah.
But the NASB does its best to translate every word as it is without trying to make the English sound better.
Yeah, and I'd say I'm reading from the NIV, and one of the rabbit holes we fell into last time was like, this word's different, which usually is not an issue for me, but in Genesis it seemed to be super prevalent and common that there were like differences in words or phrasing. So if we don't talk about all the differences, if you're following along in the NIV and Hayden's reading the NASB, don't fall into that pitfall either. Like, I might say, oh, this is different, or this is different, but I don't mm-hmm. think we're going to focus on that this yeah. time around anyway.
There's a lot of really intelligent people behind both translations, mm-hmm. and neither of them are wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're just different ways of interpreting.
Mm-hmm.
For anybody that cares, I'm reading a very peculiar one called the Lexham English Bible, but it's a lot like the NASB where it's very literal. Mm-hmm. It's just meant to be read alongside Hebrew or Greek.
Yeah. So, here we go. Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, one day.
So, I noticed something that was interesting okay. in the text. There's God, And then there's also the Spirit of God hovering over the waters.
Yeah.
And I mean, we'll get into some more interesting... once again, this is the role I'm going to play.
Yeah.
Observing the text for the first time. And I guess this is me coming with a little bit of background knowledge where I study Christianity. I'll word it like that. And I have a concept of like three in one. And but for someone reading this, we've got, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then... the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters.
Yeah,
right. Am I reading into too much there? Like, is this a separate thing? Is this...
So I think there's two ways you can take that. You either take that as they're two separate things, mm-hmm. or you take that a spirit is an aspect of God. Mm-hmm. So it could be like, there is a spirit of America, or there's like a spirit of excitement in mm-hmm. like the room. So like, it depends on how you, if you take that metaphorically or... literally, or if it's just an aspect of who God is. Mm-hmm. He has wisdom. He also has a spirit.
Yeah, and so that's part of where we're starting with this is, let's notice mm-hmm. that we have God, and then we also have the spirit of God, which yeah. is a mm-hmm. spirit connected to the same being that is doing all this. And right now, that's all we're given.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what is the Spirit?
We don't know.
Yeah, we don't really know. Yeah. We don't really know yet, but that's one of those things. It's like, okay, God and his Spirit can kind of be seen in some different lights. Mm-hmm. Let's hold on to that and see maybe if we see some other ways that happens.
Yeah. And also the picture in my head of like, in the beginning, God, the 7 foot tall bearded man, and the Spirit of God, the ghost hovering over the waters, yeah. that's probably also wrong. But yeah. like... I will admit that, like, that's what I see in my head due to all the societal crap that I have yeah. up in there.
Yeah. So, I think another thing, too, to note is that the author is... We're noticing that the author is okay with personifying maybe aspects of things.
Mm-hmm.
And putting, like, hovering over the waters is something you wouldn't normally associate with the Spirit. So from the very beginning, you're going, okay, this author is at least willing to not be super literal about mm-hmm. everything.
Cool, yeah. I'm glad we observed that. Let's keep going.
Yeah, it's a good observation.
Yeah.
Then God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse. And it was so. God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening and there was morning, a second day.
Okay, I'm noticing some more things, guys. Yes,
what are you noticing?
I'm noticing a couple things here, if I was just reading this with fresh eyes as I am right now, I never would have noticed this until we got to verse 6, in which I saw some patterns appear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So one pattern is he's separating stuff.
Yeah.
God is doing a good bit of separating. On day 1 and 2, that's primarily what he does.
Yeah, day 1 and 2, he separates light from darkness, mm-hmm. and light is good. It's interesting. He doesn't call darkness good, mm-hmm. which is interesting, just worth noting.
He sees that the light is good.
Yes, yeah. He sees that the light is good. Yeah. That's a good point. He mm-hmm. doesn't call it good. He sees that it is good. But then he calls the light day, mm-hmm. and he gives. So he separates two things. He sees that one of them is good, and then he gives them a name. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. really good.
And on the second day, he separates water from water, which I don't think we need to get too much into, like, let there be a vault between the waters, or like, how that is, mm-hmm. how yeah. that is, you know, important to an Israelite or, you know, Hebrew reading this. But once again, he's separating water from water. He's giving it names. Once again, he called the light day. He called the darkness night. He called the vault sky. He's naming things. So he's separating things. He's naming things. And then I'll hold up my next one until the next one. Yeah.
I think another thing we're starting to notice too is we start to have, quotes, so we're seeing God speaking things into existence.
That's what I was
saying. So, like, God's word and him speaking into things is very important.
Mm-hmm. And up until now, he's just saying, let this happen, let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
He's not saying, I'm going to separate the water, and then he does it. He literally just says something, and then he does it.
It's done.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, like, to remind people, there might be some things that you see that are a little bit different in translation. Don't worry too much about that. They're mm-hmm. just different ways to look at these complex Hebrew words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's day 2. Day 3, then God said... Yeah, then God said. Now we're in quotes mm-hmm. again. Yeah, just important to note. Let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the gathering of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees on the earth bearing fruit after their kind and with seed in them. And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed after their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seed in them after their kind. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, a third day.
Yep. And so I'm literally just going to start writing down some patterns that I'm seeing. God speaks things into existence. He set, like, we've had 3 days now, and they all follow the same pattern, at least the one that's obvious to my stupid eyes, which is he says something, he does something, you know, he speaks things, and then they happen, and then he sees something's good. He sees that the light was good. On the third day, he's seen that what he had just done was good, the land and the seas. So sometimes he separates, but mostly he's speaking and then doing, seeing something's good. Yeah. That's the pattern that I'm seeing.
I just noticing this for the first time. I think it's really interesting. This is the first time God makes something that is capable of recreating it, recreating itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's specific. He gives seeds so that they can recreate themselves, which is just interesting. So he's creating life that can create life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also noticed the of their own kind repetition. So it's not like a randomness to it, but there's an order. Like, these things don't just like create seed that just make random new stuff. It's like they make their own thing. They replicate themselves.
Yeah. So he's, once again, I'm just writing these down. He's speaking things into existence. He sees that some of them are good. He's calling things. He's naming things. Mm-hmm. And he called it light. He called it day. Yeah. Called it night. And then he's also classifying things. Mm-hmm. So he makes the trees and he makes the plants bearing seed bear fruit with seed in it according to their kind. So he's building classifications for things that he's calling and naming and creating.
Yeah. And he's also saying, let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place. And it was so. Mm-hmm. Like, the waters, as we understand them, are not, like, they don't have sentience. The water doesn't have sentience. Yeah. And so that's just another interesting thing to know is, like, God says to the waters, do this thing, and it does it. Like, which, that's just interesting.
Which, to an ancient person reading this, that's a big deal. Yeah. That's a very big deal. I think we mentioned it on our last episode, which is a big overarching theme of the Old Testament and Genesis is very explicitly putting God above all other powers. And all of these things where he's saying to the earth, do this, saying to the lights, do this, you know, saying to the water, do this. That's a very powerful message that's being sent to an ancient reader.
Yeah. And again, on top of that, it's personification of things that don't normally have those qualities. So just good to know that the writer is willing to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, and so far we've had one act of speaking every day. Now on day three we have two acts of speaking, and that second one is the earth is sprouting the vegetation and the plants are bearing their own seed. Mm-hmm. So that's just interesting to note as well. Then God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the days from the nights, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth. And it was so. God made the two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He made the stars also. God placed them in the expanse of the heaven to give light onto the earth, and to govern the day and the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. There was evening, and there was morning, a fourth day.
Mm-hmm. So same patterns I've seen. He speaks something into existence. It happens, and it was so. He makes things. He gives them names. In this one, he also... So in the previous creation, he's, like Chris said, he's delegating creation to creation. He's saying, you know, I just created you, now you continue to create. In this one, he's governing the separation of light and day, or excuse me, day and night. Mm-hmm. He's delegating that separation to these powers that he's created. Yeah. So he another theme is he's delegating power, whether that's the power to create, whether that's the power to separate. He's creating these things, and then he's giving them that authority to do so as well.
Yeah.
So is the writer, like, just to, like, if you're going through this the first time, you notice the writer's repeating something already. Like, mm-hmm. is the writer dumb? Like, he already said God created light. Mm-hmm. Like, he can't create light again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's one of the things that we need to pick up, not only in the actual images and the symbolisms that get put forth, but also in the way that they write things. And one of those things is repetition. Mm-hmm. And so he repeats, basically day three is basically a repetition of day one, but now we're adding in some new elements. And so in day one, God separated the light from the darkness.
You mean day four and day one?
Yeah, sorry, yeah. Day one and day four. Mm-hmm. So in day one, God separated the light from the darkness. Mm-hmm. In day four, God says, let the lights that are in the heavens mm-hmm. separate the dark mm-hmm. and night. So in the day and the night. So now the same, it's just interesting. Like, okay, God already did this. Mm-hmm. Why is he now saying that these lights should do that too? And that's like what you said. He's given governance of the separation. He's given that power mm-hmm. of separating day and light. Your day and night to the
day and light. I mean, day and light, light and day.
And then the other thing that I noticed, he repeats the same phrase twice. In verse 15, he says, "And let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth." Mm-hmm. So the heavens and the earth so far have been disconnected from each other, mm-hmm. but now the role of the lights is to give light on the earth. Mm-hmm. And then he says it again in verse 17, "God placed them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth and to govern the day and the night." So that's another thing that we should notice is like, okay, you literally said that exact same phrase mm-hmm. twice in a row.
Yes.
Why did you do that?
Yeah, and I think it's important to, like Chris said, it's important to, number one, anyone reading this, me reading this, you're going to be like, wait a minute, these writers are stupid. Mm-hmm. Like, they're repeating things that don't need to be repeated. Like, how can you have lights without the sun and moon, which is what's being implied here, kind of, you know? It's like, this isn't possible. These guys are stupid. And, like, I think you need to trust that they're not stupid.
Yeah.
You actually should probably believe that they're very intelligent people that are writing this down. And if that's the case, then they're doing it to make a point. They're doing it for a reason.
Right. To answer the question, no, they're not stupid. So if they're not stupid, this is very intentional, mm-hmm. and we need to figure out why.
Yeah. So another theme that we should be noticing is repetition. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And of specific words and phrases.
Yeah. Well, here's another specific phrase that, like, I'm surprised I haven't called out until then with my fresh eyes. He ends every single section with, "And there was evening and there was morning the first day."
Yeah. And there was evening, and there was morning a second day.
Yeah. How was there evening and morning
without the sun? He gets to day four and he's like, "Let these serve as signs to mark sacred time, such as days and years," which how could you have days and years with, you know?
Well, so either in my mind, tell me if there's a third option. For someone reading this the first time, either this person isn't very intelligent,
mm-hmm, right.
or
they're stupid. They should have put day four as day one because they're dumb.
Or they are. Okay, maybe there's three options. But the second option I would say is, or they're intelligent, and what they're doing is putting a lot of art and taking some liberty to give us an insight onto how things are created, not necessarily literally. Like, pulling it away from literalism, at least somewhat.
I think I'm going to give you a third option, but it can be placed alongside that one, mm-hmm. and that is God is ordering things. And to order something, you already have to know what that order is. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, he's speaking, he's creating things, he's calling things names, he's classifying things, he's delegating power, and then he's also providing order to what is described in the very beginning, as formless and void. It's something that has no order to it. So he creates these orders. I think if we're to understand that he created light and he created a darkness and he created day and he created night, then that also serves that he created evening, that he created morning, those concepts. And he provides the reader, us, as well as humanity, with that order. So, yeah. And I don't think that that's out of line with your second one, which is the writer is writing this to, like, once again, mean something by it in a metaphorical fashion.
Right. And that's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
And I think you just need to decide what kind of author you think is, what's going on here. And I think maybe another option would be that that they're just using language for things that we have assumptions about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe when God says morning and evening, that's not what he means.
Right.
Maybe he doesn't mean the rising and setting of the sun, so it doesn't mess anything up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. I at least when I'm reading this, even if this wasn't the Bible and I was just reading a story, I'd go, oh, okay, this is creation narrative, which is, would be my own personal opinion reading this. But then I'd go, oh, like this, he's going a lot deeper than just showing me how things were created.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more here.
Yeah.
Like, he could have just had a list, and that's not what's happening.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think a couple things that we should be holding on to then as we continue to read mm-hmm. is the way that these lights order and govern time and govern days and nights, and also that they're there to give light onto the earth. Mm-hmm. I think that's another important aspect of those things.
And another thing is, I won't go into this now, right, because we're not there yet, but what if there's a specific number of days?
Yeah.
What if there's a specific number of evenings and mornings that actually means something?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're counting them.
So
the third, the fourth.
Yeah, let's see. Let's see how the story unfolds, guys.
I'm excited.
I don't think it will get there.
I don't think it will. Then God said, "Let the waters teem with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth in the open expanse of the heavens." God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves and with which the waters swarmed after their kind and every winged bird after its kind, and God saw that it was good. God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters and the seas and let birds multiply on the earth." There was evening and there was morning, a fifth day.
Mm-hmm. Let's keep going.
Yeah. I have a couple things. Yeah. Just a note on this one. We have again two speakings of mm-hmm. God in this one. One was kind of the one that we expect that we've been getting over. Let there be this, and it was so.
Mm-hmm.
And now though we have a second one, which is a blessing, and the blessing is be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters and the seas. So this is, we haven't had a blessing yet. Mm-hmm. So all of God's speakings have kind of been of the same accord. Now we've got this new speaking. Okay, so God blesses things. All right, well, let's hold that and just carry it with us as well.
Yeah. Another thing, so I'm glad you mentioned that. Something that I know, and this is not of my own intelligence, this is like me reading a lot of other, you know, smarter people, listening to a lot of other smarter people, is that something that is very important to, like, the Codex of Genesis is the number of times things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Numbers are very important to the whole Bible, but specifically to the Old Testament.
Yeah, especially in the Hebrew language.
Yes.
Like, those are inherently intertwined because their numbers are literally letters.
Yeah.
So it's on a scale we can't even understand.
I was going to say, like, for someone who's interested in it, look into the structure of Genesis 1, like, we're not only just finding, like, word structures and repetitions, but, like, the structure of how it's built, the number of words, the number of sentences in Hebrew. Every single word is here for a reason. It's counted, it's specific, its syllables are specific. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to take note of all the number of times that the things that we're noticing happen.
Yeah. Yeah, and one interesting thing, too, the day before, the lights filled the heavens and the expanse in the heavens. Now we have birds that are in the open expanse of the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
So heavens must mean more than just heaven or more than just sky, because we know, and so did they, that, and obviously the reason we know that they know the difference is because they put it on two different days. that the stars inhabit one sort of space in the sky, mm-hmm. and the birds inhabit a different space in the sky.
Right? Well, and I'm glad you called that out, too, because this is one of the things that like, really frustrated me last time with like the difference in translations, is that in the NIV, sometimes I've got heavens, like in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, but for the rest of the time, it's pretty much just referring to sky, like when he calls the vault sky, mm-hmm. and then when he puts birds in the sky. And in the NASB, it was heavens.
Yeah.
And, like, my Western brain really didn't like those two words overlapping.
Mm-hmm.
But, Chris, I think you can kind of shed some light on, like, why that is
so
that way.
So, basically, it's the same word. So, basically, what you have to assume is if you see the same word used for two different things, just that they have one word that can mean two different things.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, the very basic thing you just have to be okay with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's, like, we use words... We have words like that, too, that you might have one word that means two different things. So, basically, when you're reading it, in English, if you have an NIV, there's probably a whole bunch of smart people that decided to translate that for you, so you know what they're talking about that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also just good to know that sometimes when they say sky, they're also talking about heavens.
Yeah.
And sometimes when they say heavens, they're also just talking about the sky.
Yeah, and that one, the reason that one kind of frustrated me too is because I go back to the, man, these people are stupid. They think that heaven is just up there. Mm-hmm. You know, and like, they might have. Like, they very well might have. So have I at some points in my life. But I don't think that that should discourage you from right. seeing what we're trying to see right now.
That's not the point of this. No. The point isn't to say, look up,
that's where
heaven is.
And yeah, that's where the heavens are.
Yeah, it's talking about God creating those things.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And so that's why we're doing this, is like, okay, why do we have this connotation that heaven is this place in the sky?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is kind of where it comes from, yep. but we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just starting with the basics, so just grab the basics and take them with you.
Yeah, right now we haven't even talked about anything heavenly being except for God,
mm-hmm.
as far as we know, just reading this.
Yeah.
Yep, so we'll just call that episode the lost episode, because we're never going to release it, and it's also really helping, because we've...
The B-sides.
I've fallen into the exact same pitfalls I feel like a lot of other people have when reading this text.
Yeah. So going on from the fifth day on. Then God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth after their kind. And it was so. God made the beasts of the earth after their kind, and the cattle after their kind, and everything that creeps on the ground after its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them, and God said, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Then God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the surface of all the earth, and every tree which has fruit yielding seed. It shall be food for you, and to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the sky, and to everything that lives and moves on the earth, I have given the green plants for food. And it was so. God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day.
Okay. There's a lot to notice here.
Yes, we did a lot of things here.
Yeah. One thing, so this is a hairy thing. He says, be fruitful and multiply to the birds and to
humans.
The humans, but not to the beasts.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is.
Yeah. I don't really know either,
yeah.
honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, he says it to the birds and the fish and to the humans. And so I think that's maybe just something for us to grab and take with us. I wonder...
Got no answer for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think... So there are two, speaking of blessings, this is now the second one,
mm-hmm.
and it sounds very, very similar to the first one,
mm-hmm.
Except that he adds... Not only be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth, but also subdue it and rule over those things. So I think that's something that we should be noticing, that the humans are like the other creatures,
mm-hmm.
but they also now have this other thing, the subduing and the ruling over, which the heavens also had a governing, the sky, the lights in the skies also had a governing. So now we should probably be noting that stuff. The heavens were supposed to govern the light for order and also to give light onto the earth. And now the humans are supposed to govern the earth and everything in it to be fruitful and multiply and also for order.
So maybe further delegating between the beasts that are on the earth and the humans that are on the earth. These are two different things. Maybe that wouldn't be super clear unless they did that kind of thing. Because he blesses, once again, the birds and the fish, and he blesses the humans, not the beasts.
Yeah.
God's got no love for the beasts.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, you have humankind being made in the image of God. That should definitely stand out to you, because nothing else has been made in the image of God.
Yeah.
This is very important.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you went there, Chris, because something that I notice, and then God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness. So,
yeah, why the plural?
That's a calm way of saying it. Like, I feel like as a Sunday school kid, this was never even called out to me. And then, Chris, you mentioned, like, in middle school Bible camp, they were like, oh, yeah, it's like the triune God. It's like him talking to Jesus the Trinity, and the Holy Spirit. Yeah. You know, but to us, to me with fresh eyes, this like jumps out at me, because in my NIV or even my NASB translation, I've been reading God as a singular. God created this. God said this. He did this. He done this. And then he says, let us do this in our, and I'm like, what? Like that is it's jarring. This is the first observation to me that's like, whoa, like one of these things is not like the others.
Yeah. Well, one thing you did notice earlier that we put in our backpack and took with us was that God, there was God, and there was also the Spirit of God. Yeah. So one possibility, and I don't think we're necessarily supposed to know necessarily yet, is, oh, well, maybe is just, we've already seen kind of this differentiating between God and the Spirit of God, so maybe God kind of thinks of himself in a plural sense. Like, we kind of already saw there was God and then the Spirit of God, so maybe.
He's got, like, a multiple personality thing going on.
Well, yeah, and, you know, we also are seeing, too, that he is also personifying a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So if he personifies the stars in the sky, like, what's to stop him from talking to them while he's creating things? So we don't really know who God's talking to. Yeah, and there's a big rabbit trail you can go down to with the, and I won't get into it, but I'll inform you that the word Elohim for God is a plural word, so it can mean gods. So in order for that word to line up with the rest of the sentence, you would have to have plural verbs.
So what you're telling me is every single time I've seen in English the singular God, what I think of in my Western brain as the 7-foot tall bearded man singular, it's been plural. It's been gods.
It's a word that is, yes. So it's Elohim, and the im is plural. So you add that onto a word if you want to make it plural.
Yeah.
But there are times when that word is taken singularly. Okay. So basically what you have to do is, really, you're trusting this author, but you're also trusting people that are translating your Bible to go, They've thought about this a lot, and they're going to take this as singular, which I do trust them, but it is good to know that when you see that it makes sense in the format that it's written.
Yeah, and I'd say that makes it so that it's a little less jarring for me to see the let us make. Because like Hayden said, first of all, we've already got the plural Elohim and the Holy Spirit, so we've got, even in English, a plurality of beings or things or whatever in the beginning. But also, if every single time I see God, it's actually plural, that doesn't make this stand out, and also doesn't make me be like, these guys are stupid.
Yeah.
I'd also say, let's not get into it, because the Bible Project did like 30 episodes on this exact thing.
Well, I think we hold on to it, and we keep reading, and see if they define who God or gods is.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we haven't even we're still not even sure what this creator is. Yeah. So, like, maybe that's going to be spelled out for us here soon. And maybe he'll get a name.
And the noun god has been plural, but all the verbs this whole time have been singular. So, you know, clearly the authors are intentionally messing with their own grammar. And I think either, you know, there's probably a multiple different ways of reasons why they would do that. But I think part of it is maybe they're just saying, like, there's personhood and personality about this creative deity that can't be understood with even just, like, normal language. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to break some common ways of using language just to show you that fact. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, I also think this was probably not, like, normal, but I think an ancient reader reading this understood what it was trying to say. It wasn't like me saying to Hayden, the plural gods singularly created this. Like, in our language, there's not really that many concepts for that. I think to the people reading this, though,
I think for me, like, just thinking about it right now, like, if I could replace God with just divinity, like, it's an aspect, and it, like, that makes more sense to me, because divinity can, like, it doesn't have, it's not, and this is kind of like this word, it doesn't have necessarily plural or singular connotations. We just know it as something that's God.
Yeah. I was thinking the other day, I said this to Hayden too, where it's like, we might have concepts for this where it's like, let's say, you know, our president and the Chinese president come together and they have a summit. Like, someone could report on that and they could be like, the Americans and the Chinese came together and spoke today. Mm-hmm. And that is two plural things coming together and singularly speaking.
Right.
Because in reality, it was two guys from each of those places coming together.
Right. That's really good. And I think the important thing to take away is this isn't an accident. And like Hayden said, yeah, the verbs are singular. So, like, this person is being intentional in this. And if they thought this was a mistake, they would have changed it at some point. Like, there is a reason it's here. And it's probably to get us to lean in and really think about this and go, who is this god? Or who are these gods? Mm-hmm. And, like, hopefully they're going to tell us at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. I was going to say that, moving on from that point, the next thing, Hayden, you already said it, but I think it bears repeating, and it's very important, is mankind is made in God's image, in God's likeness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's repeated three times in, like, a very short amount of sentences. Let us make mankind in our image, our likeness. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. So, like...
Yeah.
If I wanted someone to know something that was important, I'd be like, Roma, don't touch the stove. Roma,
don't
touch the stove. Do you see this stove? Don't touch it. It's hot. Like, I think this is someone being like, this is very, very important.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't do it at all. We're talking about repetitions. This does not happen. He doesn't make the birds or the lights even in his own image. He makes us in his own image.
One thing I want to add on just to the God thing before we move on is that this is still not a name. So we haven't named God. This is a title.
Yeah.
So, like, we're not even really saying it's who, like, this is yet.
Yeah, it's like a class of being.
Right, exactly. So even though this is capitalized in art and that we referred to him as God, like, that's not his name.
Yeah.
So, like, think about that as you're going through reading this, like, and you're upset about the plurality of the word God or whatever. This isn't a name.
Yeah.
So, like, this isn't trying to signify one thing yet.
Yeah. Well, I made a joke, but, like, it's seriously in my mind, a big bearded man pointing at things and speaking things and doing it. Like, I'm not embarrassed to say that that's in my mind, and I would venture to guess that's probably in a lot of people's minds when they read this. Like, that it's not an individual, certainly not like a humanoid doing these things. It's something that, like, I'm having a huge struggle thinking, like, picturing in my head.
Right, and we're just not at the point where we know what that is yet. And that's part of this. It's to draw you in, to show you how powerful this thing is, and then to name it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Thing is a bad word for God, but I don't have anything else to say.
Yeah. So let's kind of close this part by going to Genesis 2 and starting in verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed, and all their hosts. By the seventh day, God completed his work, which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made.
Couple of things to note.
So, noticing a few things here, huh?
So, going back a little bit, on the sixth day, God saw all that he had made, and it wasn't just good. No.
It was very good.
It was real good. Mm-hmm. So once again, just, you know, God sees that things are good, but once he saw all that he had made, he saw that it was very good. And I think that that's important to anybody reading the Old Testament, because, like, anyone can tell you that one of the overarching themes of the Old Testament is that humans suck. We suck. We screw everything up. We suck. Mm-hmm. But, like, in the beginning, quite literally, we were good. Like, God saw us as good. And, like, I'm not saying we were good. I'm saying God saw us as good,
yeah,
as very good, yeah, as part of a very good creation. So I think that's important to note.
Yeah. And so the next verse is, this is the account of the heavens and the earth when they were created, and the day that the Lord God made earth and heaven. Now, no shrub of the field was yet in the earth. Okay, wait a second. Just in that other chapter before,
day five?
We already had shrubs of the earth. So, okay, so here in Genesis 2, verse 4, we're clearly starting a different, new, but somehow connected story. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the reason why they break the chapters where they are.
Yeah.
Is because if they ended it at Genesis 2, verse 3, if that was all just Genesis 1, mm-hmm, I think we'd be really tempted to read these as two separate accounts.
Right.
But I think part of the reason they did that was because this is intended to be read as one account, and yet they're two, they talk in different linear ways, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, and quite literally, Hayden's is not like this in the NASB, but mine is in the NIV. Genesis 1 and the first part of Genesis 2 is all indented as though it's poetry. Mm. And I think, Chris, I think you said this last time, like, it is poetry. Like, that's not something to...
Right. I don't think anybody would disagree that this is written in the form of ancient Hebrew poetry. Mm-hmm. If you know ancient Hebrew, and I don't, like, I know some of it. I've taken a couple Hebrew courses. But if you know Hebrew poetry, this checks all the marks of a Hebrew poetry. Now, you can have opinions on whether it's literal in some places or not. Like, that's totally fine. But it's just written like poetry.
Yeah.
It's got all those marks.
Yeah, and in my stupid Western mind, I have to, like, compare it to something. It's like if in The Lord of the Rings, there was a song that, like, its lyrics summed up the story of The Lord of the Rings. It was like, oh, the hobbit threw the thing in the Mount Doom. And then all of a sudden... the story starts, and it's like, oh, here's the hobbit, and, like, he hasn't thrown the ring into Mount Doom yet. You're not like, wait a minute, like, why hasn't it happened? You just said it happened. It's like, it's starting out with a poem that is very important. It's there for a reason, for lots of reasons, and we just talked about all of them, but then now we're getting into a little bit different, like, it's an account. It's not a poem, and I'm not saying anything as far as, like, one super metaphor, one super literal. I'm not speaking to that. They're just two different. Not even accounts. They're two different
styles of writing.
And that's important.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you can make your own decisions on which parts are literal, which, if it's all literal, like, all of that's totally fine. Make your decisions on that. Do your homework on it. But the point of it isn't to address that. It's to tell you a story that the next part is then going to go into much more in depth and give you the name of this thing we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Well, so before we go too much further, I want to talk quickly about the seventh day.
Mm-hmm.
In those last three verses, we see a lot of repetition. The words I said and kind of emphasized were completed. He completed, 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 and his work. He rested, and the seventh day, on the work that he had done, on the seventh day, he rested from the work which God created and made.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's something... First of all, God worked. That's just interesting to know.
Mm-hmm.
And then God completed his work, and that completion of the work happened on the seventh day. And also, I'm actually noticing something missing from this day.
No evening, no morning.
There's no evening and no morning.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting, and maybe just something that we can hold on to and keep with us as we go.
Yeah. Something else too is that he blesses the fish and the birds, doesn't bless the beasts, blesses mankind, and then he blesses the seventh day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So kind of just interesting that those three forms of blessing, three sounds like an important number, those three blessings are all on three kind of different things.
Yeah, and I'd have to look at the word, but in what I have here is sanctified that day, but that's also the same word for hallowed. So it's like that's why that's called like the holy day, is because it's right here in Genesis. Is this day is he's literally made that day holy?
Yeah,
which is pretty wild.
And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy.
Yeah, so if you know if you like to work a lot and you just realize that rest is something that God like put in the form of create, like put in the order of creation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's just happened somewhere in the Bible. Obviously, going forward, we're gonna have to know that this is incredibly important. Like this is so important that it is in the foundation of creation.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get to certain parts of the Bible that talk about the Sabbath, like realize what weight that's bringing forth. Like it's not. I don't know. I tend to make light out of it when I read it in the New Testament and go, people are being ridiculous here. But you got to realize it's their tradition.
Yeah.
Yep.
And also noticing, reading for the fresh eyes, like this ends on number 7. 7's probably pretty important.
Well, I've been counting the number of times that God says that things are good.
Yep.
It happens 7 times.
7 times?
Yep. So once again, not going to blow my mind or anything like that, but he does say that things are good 7 times. This ends on a 7th day. 7 seems to be important.
Yes. So yeah. Keep that in mind, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, really quickly, as we wrap up, we're kind of done with our time. Mm-hmm. We've found a lot of things in Genesis 1 that we have grabbed and taken with us. Some of those are like the separation and the light being good and the ordering and the things after their own kind and the governing of things, and the 7 and the day and the work and the completion.
One more just to fit in there. He speaks things into existence. There's a lot of quotes. 10 times that happens.
Yeah.
Also significant.
Yeah. And so I think just to like give one example of if we're carrying this all with us,
mm-hmm.
and reading, we get to a place like John 19, and this is Jesus' crucifixion. And starting in verse 30, therefore, when Jesus had received the sour wine, he said, "It is finished," and he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. It's finished. It's complete. It's that same idea that was being used and reused over and over and over again in that seventh day thing. Mm-hmm. And then we get to John 20, and verse 1 is, now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came up early in the morning. And then later on, it says again, now it was the first day of the week. Mm-hmm. John is
emphasizing,
he repeats this, now it's the first day. Mm-hmm. It's the first day. And he's drawing on the completion of the work on the seventh day where there was no morning and no evening. And now John's giving it a morning. And he's saying, now this is the morning of the first day of a new week.
And that's like one of a gazillion different ways that this is used. Like that's a really good example because it's like kind of tying the very beginning to, not the very end, but like the new beginning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's so many ways that we're going to see these. Well, we just noticed like what, 15 different patterns, 15 different interesting things. Like they're going to be used a lot of times as we continue to read.
Yeah. If you keep this with you, this first part of Genesis and the first chapter of Genesis and the first part of chapter 2, like when you read the Bible, you're going to see this everywhere.
Yeah.
And like anytime you see so much, you're going to go, oh, that reminds me of the creation narrative. Mm-hmm. And you're right. That's on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And like, again, it's the reason we know that it's not an accident. Like just go read John and just mm-hmm. look at evening and morning and days and just underline any time that that's said. And like in that passion narrative, John's like, now it was the day before the Sabbath. It was the evening. Night had fallen. Mm-hmm. It was the evening. It was the morning. It was the evening. It was the morning. And then boom, on the first day of the new week, that's when Jesus raises. And he's saying something deep and theological that you wouldn't get, you wouldn't be clued into it, mm-hmm. unless you were understanding and tracking with Genesis 1. So mm-hmm. that's why this is important.
Yeah, this is very important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
cool.
Yep. So not that we don't know that now.
Yeah.
Got these fresh eyes, but.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
but we will, yeah.
So that's just kind of step one in taking the symbolism, the themes, the metaphors, the repetition
mm-hmm.
of Genesis 1 with you as you're reading the Bible. And yeah, just beginning meditation. Shout out to Canyon Coffee Roasters for fueling every one of our conversations. If you are only listening, you don't see it, but we are drinking a cup of Canyon every time we talk together. Thanks to John Jones Project and Clink, who are making the music that you hear in the background. Thank you for making awesome stuff that we get to share with the people that are listening to our podcast. And thank you guys for tuning in. And always feel free to let us know if you have questions or things you want to talk about. Yeah, or if you want to be on the show, we'd love to have you as well. All right, thanks. We'll see you next time.
One. Let us open the Bible, the first chapter.
Open the first page of the first book of the first Bible.
It will say, context.
The first book of the first Bible.
The first book of the first Bible.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah. Do they have a biography of the author?
Yeah, the biography. Yeah, some,
like,
of the
if
author.
You flip over the book,
yeah. Yeah, on the back, like, it'll have picture. Like
Moses lives in Geneva, New York, with his three dogs and his wife. Yeah.
New York Times heralds Genesis.
Yeah. Tim Mackey says 5 stars.
You got to read it to believe it.